Hello everyone and welcome to Video Games and Coffee. I'm your host Daniel and today I'll be talking about what I think is one of the best open world post-apocalyptic games ever to be made, Dying Light. I would like to start off by thanking everyone for listening in today and introducing the show, as it is the very first episode of Video Games and Coffee. This has been a project I've been very passionate about and thinking of doing for the better part of a year, and I'm very excited to finally be able to put everything together in a format I hope you'll enjoy. There are many different podcasts and many different hosts discussing video games, and I do sincerely appreciate you choosing mine and me to listen to today. So if you're ready, you're about to listen to a grown man talking about games in his basement. But the most important thing is, it's not my mom's basement. It is my basement, I promise you. I hope that my podcast feels like I'm having a conversation with you, because that is my goal for how I want my show to feel. So for the next several minutes, you're about to hear me talk about a video game. Oh my God. Okay, here we go. So, video games are an art form, without question. Many people still see them as a rather immature pastime and often internally roll their eyes at either kids or adults that play them. But those of us that really do enjoy them, we know it's more than just a mindless time suck. We love playing through our favorite titles for the same reason someone else may read through their favorite book over and over again, or watch their favorite movies and listen to the same tracks from their favorite, their favorite albums on repeat. They do it because of how it makes them feel and because of where that little bit of enjoyment takes them. Video games today have come a long way since the days of harshly linear gameplay we had back in the old days. It's truly unbelievable what game creators can do today through gorgeous visuals, interactive gameplay, and what I believe is one of today's most important elements, storytelling. There are games you keep coming back to because of the satisfying game mechanics, and there are those that you come back to because of the deep and impactful story it told you. These stories are told to you through a medium that allows you to interact with the characters and their world and lets you accompany them on their journey from beginning to end, many times allowing you to make choices that affect the experience and overall outcome. These stories are responsible for your buy-in and your love or hate for the characters and their situations. I want my podcast to be a place where you can hear about the games I've played and how they made me feel, be it good, bad, or so-so. My first choice was Dying Light, as it is a game that, in my opinion, satisfies both in gameplay and story. What I want to do today is not give away any spoilers or given hours-long blow-by-blow through the game. What I'm hoping to do is two things. Connect with those of you who are already familiar with Dying Light and enjoy it as much as I do, as well as those who are undecided about giving it a try with a short, review and intro. If you're like me, when you're undecided on a purchase, you want to get a second or even a third opinion before dropping some money on it. Dying Light has done remarkably well holding its value, and if you're eyeballing the Platinum Edition on Steam as of this very moment, you are looking at dropping a hundo for that bundle. Now, I actually lost track of how many times I've played through Dying Light. It's always been a game that I come back to, whether I'm in the mood to take in the whole story, beginning to end, or to just jump into an existing save file where the story is 100% complete, and I want to just do some very satisfying running, jumping, shooting, slashing, ziplining, or driving. There are times I want to sit down and get lost in the game's story so much that I forget I'm playing a game at all. And then there are times I want the technical challenge of playing something. This game is a great combination for both experiences. like any other game in the genre, the skills and upgrades that you improve upon make it that much more fun, and the developers did a wonderful job of creating balance and fairness throughout the course of the story by not making it so unbearably difficult in the beginning until you're able to level yourself up. The enemies get progressively harder, but you also get progressively tougher yourself. Although there are a few tough parts, the gameplay is so good, and the story is very interesting, and it does keep you hooked through, you know, through the entirety of the game, that you really don't ever find yourself wanting to slam your controller down and rage quit it. Though I will admit, I mean, when you're talking about a game that's full of zombies and shit, some bosses you face could definitely almost take you there. Dying Light was created by Polish video game developer Techland and released in 2015. The team still put out updates and DLCs. I mean, it is incredible that they are still creating content for it. They seem to be very active with new content, and periodically, you know, they've been releasing, you know, new outfits, weapons, you know, of different themes, that kind of thing. It seems, though, that the major DLCs, like expansion kind of DLCs, are pretty much done. They've put some out, but, you know, Dying Light 2, the sequel, is coming out, so I don't really see a major DLC coming out anymore for, you know, the first Dying Light game here. So the soon-to-be-released Dying Light 2, Stay Human, I'm hoping they continue to, you know, with that coming out, I'm hoping they continue to dedicate resources to the first game, but understandably, if you're releasing an entirely new game, then that's where you want your focus to remain, but, you know, here's hoping. Now, I remember first playing this back in 2015 with my father-in-law, who's also a big gamer like myself. He was the one that actually got me hip to it. He told me there's this new open-world zombie game where you traverse the map doing parkour. You can craft your items and weapons and this, that, and the other. And I went over to his place, and we started it up. And I immediately took note of and fell in love with the music. The game score by Powell Blazak, and I know I'm butchering that, so my sincere apologies, Blazczak, Blazak, I think that's what it is, so we'll just call him Powell. That game score is wonderful. I never forgot, it was my first impression of the game, I never forgot it, and it's remained one of my favorite video game soundtracks. At the main menu before we started playing, I remember he told me it sounded like music that you would hear in a John Carpenter movie. And that's absolutely perfect. That is exactly how I will describe it to you today. It's very Escape from New York. It does not sound like your typical horror genre music. His creative use of synthesizers to create and control the very lonely, somber tone of the game and the situations you find yourself in was perfectly done. I myself am a huge fan and collector of game soundtracks, and this is an album that I do listen to often. No shit, no lie. It's a really good album. The perfect album to play in the fall around Halloween, driving around. I absolutely love it. I mean, I don't know. I love weird shit like that, but I can't say enough good things about this album. It's really good. But from what I've read, I don't believe Powell returns for the game's sequel, though, which I find to be disappointing because I would have loved to hear his score for Dying Light 2. But I am grateful that we got two of his albums for Dying Light because a second album was released for the game's major DLC called The Following, which is a DLC that is a continuation of the core story to the base game. So once you arrive at the main menu with, you know, good old Powell setting the mood for you and giving you a great first impression, you start a new game, and there is a short opening cinematic. It begins by introducing you to the game's protagonist, Kyle Crane, which, fuck, man. I mean, does that sound any more comic book? There's, you know, Peter Parker, Otto Octavius, and now there's Kyle Crane. That's absolute. That's very Marvel sounding. But Kyle Crane, he's about to jump out of an airplane and parachute into the fictional city of Haran, ground zero for the zombie outbreak. During all of this, Crane is listening to a woman's voice over his radio explaining his objective. So it's, you know, it's setting the plot up, setting his objective up for us right from the very beginning, so we kind of know what's going on. And that objective is to retrieve intel that is currently in the hands of an operative that has flipped sides and now leads one of the city's two main opposing groups of survivors. So it seems that the people that Kyle Crane is working for, he's kind of like the replacement secret agent that they had go into this place because the first one flipped on him. So that seems to be the gist of it. That's kind of what you get in the very beginning. Now, holy shit, things quickly take a turn for the worse when Crane lands in the city's streets and is immediately attacked by a group of men. Like a total zombie apocalypse survivor noob who's obviously never seen movies like 28 Days Later or who's obviously never played The Last of Us, he fires his gun, which then attracts a swarm of infected, leading to him receiving a nasty bite on his arm. He's quickly rescued by a man and a woman that come to his aid and taken back to their base of operations. But not before the guy that helps him out bites it and... Pun right there. That was not on purpose. That was pretty good though. And gets eaten alive trying to hold back the group of infected that attack him. So he saved both Crane and this new mystery woman, but he doesn't make it. And that kind of sets the tone between the relationship between Crane and this new woman. Then you eventually wake up in a strange room inside of a tower that happens to be the base of operations for one of the city's survivor groups. From here on, you control Kyle Crane and begin the story, earning the locals' trust, working toward reaching your objective of obtaining that intel for the agency that hired you, and just figuring out what the shit is going on here in Haran. Because you not only have this hugely infectious zombie outbreak, but you also have the fighting that's happening amongst the surviving citizens. Things aren't very easy for good old Crane in the very beginning, and he's not really accepted until, of course, you know, this particular kind of gameplay and the tasks that you have in the beginning, it's not something we haven't seen before, you know, where you're kind of an outsider and you start to do favors, do missions to earn the trust of the locals there. But it is very well done. You know, they're all pissed at him because the guy that saved you got killed, which they obviously, you know, they knew and I'm assuming they liked. And in fact, I think when you leave your room, one of the NPCs said, such and such died saving this guy, you know? So it's kind of that tone in the beginning. But as soon as you start doing your missions, everybody starts to be a little more welcoming and a little more helpful. Now, speaking of missions, you have plenty of side quests to complete on top of story missions. One thing that I particularly enjoy is if you're away from the game for a while and you forget what you were doing when you last played, you do have a narration during the loading screen explaining what Crane's been tasked to do now, which I always thought was a nice touch, and I love that. Ah, God, nothing pisses me off more than, you know, coming back to a game and you're like, God, Lee, it was really good. I was really into it. Now, what the hell was I doing? I think that takes silver medal to coming back to a game and forgetting all the fucking controls. And I think that's the worst. When you have to kind of relearn all the controls again. Holy shit, especially if you're coming from playing the Nintendo Switch for a while, because if you're playing the Switch, so the basically the confirm button and the back button, the actual physical locations of those buttons on the Switch are completely opposite from PlayStation and Xbox. So when you come from playing the Switch and you go into an Xbox or PlayStation game, you find yourself confirming shit you didn't want to do and backing out of shit that you didn't want to back out of too. And that, God damn it, that's so frustrating. But, you know, hey, I digress. One other thing I wanted to mention is that it does have multiplayer co-op as well. You have the ability to set your current game sessions to public or private for others to join, as well as randomly or specifically finding another session that you would like to join yourself. I've only played online once with a friend, but it was easy to do and a lot of fun. Ultimately, what we honestly ended up doing was just going up to the tower's roof and watching each other just jump off the side because it like a couple of idiots, because it not only looked funny, but you immediately respawn. Now that's just if you jump off the roof. Do not expect to just respawn without any repercussions in the actual gameplay. But I don't like to give spoilers on here, but I'll give that little spoiler. You can jump off the roof, nothing will happen. But from what I was able to tell, if you're the host of a game, then any progress you make will count toward your character. But that didn't seem to be the case with my friend, who was the one that joined my game. If I remember correctly, I was able to progress kind of in my campaign, in the story, and he helped me do it, but it did not count for him. So when he started his game back up, he was still wherever he was at, because I had been playing the game for years, and I had just convinced him to get it. And he told me that he wasn't any further in the game from, you know, before he had joined mine. So that is an important detail I wanted to mention before you tried it out. So I don't believe that you can just have a buddy join in and you can both go through the entire game together. I just don't think that's the case at all. But I don't think that's the case for a lot of online games. I actually don't even know, because as it's weirdly, I'm not an online gamer. I haven't played online in years. To give you an idea, I haven't played online since Call of Duty, was it Black Ops or Modern Warfare or Modern Warfare 2 that had the zombies on the 360? That was the last time I played online. I never really found anybody to do so. So it was never something I really would seek out. You know, I wouldn't necessarily buy a game for its multiplayer capabilities, because I never found anybody to play with. But yeah, I mean, it was still a lot of fun. It's fun. I like actually seeing somebody else in the game that's, you know, a character being played by somebody else, because you never see your character. You never see Kyle Crane. You just see, it's a first-person game, so you just see hands and you see legs and feet. In fact, you don't have any idea what Kyle Crane looks like besides a glimpse of him in the main menu. So if you're at the main menu, I believe like he has his back to you, and if you choose to go into a particular save file, then it switches to a front view of him, and you can actually see what the character looks like. He looks rugged, he looks tough. I guess he kind of looks like what his voice sounds like. I'm not really sure, but I'll let you be the judge. Again, I digress. I'm going on tangents here. Let's get back on track here. There were plenty of DLCs released that came in the form of expansions, outfits, weapons, and buggy paint jobs. One major DLC was called Cuisine and Cargo, which basically just opened up a couple of areas on the map that are considered quarantine zones that weren't available to you before. It doesn't make the map any bigger. It just unlocks a particular building. So for one was a subway tunnel that was closed off before. The subway tunnel is called the Holy Year Tunnel, and the other was a building that is now unlocked called the Three Moons Restaurant. Another big DLC was the Bozak Horde. This is set in the Haran Stadium, and you face wave after wave of zombies, and this is one that can get quite difficult. This one is available as a single player and a co-op. Either way, you get your ass handed to you eventually, and it is not pretty. It's very tough. That was a lot of people talked online on how it kind of reminded you of the Call of Duty Zombies a bit, but shit, it got tough quick. Now, the following is the biggest and most major DLC available, and it expands the story of the base game. Basically, after the events of the base game's story, you get to the end and you figure out what's what and what Kyle Crane's going to do next. So the DLC starts off with a cutscene where a man makes it into the city from the countryside. He was able to sneak into the city where, up until this point, I believe that, you know, getting out of Haran was almost impossible because this agency that hired Crane, as well as some other military or whatever like that, kind of in a very shady way, quarantined. They basically baned everybody in Haran. I mean, blew up the bridges and shit to keep people from getting out. So it was very Dark Knight Rises. But this guy comes in, finds a way into the city, and he's been injured and doesn't make it. But, you know, he doesn't make it. He kicks the bucket, but not before, you know, you hear him ramble on about people who are untouched by the sickness. And seeing as how Crane is certainly not down with the sickness, Jesus Christ. Okay. He finds a way out of Haran, and out to the country in search of answers to what might mean, it might mean that there's a, you know, another cure, or at least a weapon, or fucking, I don't know, aerosol, you know, air spray or whatever the fuck it is. It's just like, shit. So it's people out there are, you know, not touched by it. Well, let's go see what's going on. So Antizin, which is the fictional drug within the game, is the drug used for those who have been bitten, including Crane himself. It helps keep the person from turning into a zombie, but only delays the inevitable and keeps it at bay for so long. They're quickly running out of Antizin, and Crane has to do something quick to help his friends. That's really the whole plot of the following. It's a fantastic DLC and a welcome continuation to the story. The inclusion of a buggy is just so much fun. I didn't think that a game that was so hardcore, first person running, jumping, and parkouring the shit out of everything and everybody, you just don't expect that a vehicle in a game like this is going to work. I don't know if it's just because the gameplay was so different as far as how you travel that the inclusion of a vehicle just doesn't make sense, or maybe just in the back of your mind you don't think that the developers who do, you know, running, jumping, and fucking swinging and all this shit so well that they can also do driving, you know, the driving mechanics well, you know, just as well as they do. And it completely proves you wrong, because when I heard that you do get a buggy and you drive around, I was like, oh man, I wonder how that's going to be. It is so much fun. It's a very satisfying, it's not difficult at all to get around. It's a very fair vehicle. The buggy is very fair. You know, there's no crazy oversteer or understeer. Because it's not a racing game, and we're not playing Forza Horizon here. So it's a welcome addition to the game. Seeing as how there are no buildings to climb and jump to evade danger like there are in Haran, traversing the map would be entirely on foot through vast open fields of infected. I mean, think about it. You're in the city. You can climb up. You can jump over this. You can hide behind that. You're on the countryside, and 30 of those bastards are coming at you. You got nowhere to go but in a straight fucking line, and, you know, pray you don't get your, you know, pray you don't get your ass eaten. Fuck, that sounded dirty. This is going to be almost impossible. Okay, and hey, speaking of ass, this buggy is the shit. All right, I swear to God, I'm gonna stop. I'm on a fucking roll here, and I wasn't even in the, like, a roll type of mood today, but this is, whew. All right. So you can upgrade the parts and improve the durability and performance. You can upgrade its armor and add weapons such as mines that drop to kill pursuing zombies, and also give you off an electric charge, for those that, you know, can catch up and, you know, eventually grab onto your buggy. You just, you know, you hit the button and then boom, it just zaps them, which is always very satisfying, especially if there's, you know, three or four zombies all grabbing onto to the buggy. Now, the buggy can be damaged, but easily repaired with parts you scavenge from other cars. You do want to keep your eye on the gas gauge as well, but it's not. I've never found myself running out of gas, but you can siphon gas from vehicles, and so pay attention to that. You can siphon gas from vehicles. You can siphon gas out of existing gas pumps, but, you know, anytime you see it, check the car's gas tank and see if you can get some out, because you do not want to be caught out in the middle of the field, especially at night with these sons of bitches coming up on you. There is no, if you get caught out there on foot without your buggy, you are 100% fucked, so do not let that happen. So the buggy is certainly not a throwaway item and is a welcome addition to your inventory. It's also a really good way to level up, because the kills that you get, driving through fields, you know, you can run those bastards over, mow them down, and your points just keep racking up and racking up. And it gets easier to do that the more armor, the more offensive upgrades, you know, offensive upgrades that you do to it, and more defensive as well, so it doesn't get damaged easily. Especially if you make the buggy faster, it really starts making it easier to mow down the zombies, and your skill points starts just skyrocketing. Now, the last DLC that was released was called Hellraid. Hellraid has really nothing to do with the base story, but gives you almost an entirely new game to play. It's very arcade-like with a medieval theme. You are venturing further down into this castle or dungeon, fighting and killing medieval zombie soldiers. And there are story-like objectives, so it's not simply a grind. You know, it's not like playing fucking, you know, House of the Dead. You just keep going until you die. No, I mean, there is shit you got to find. But be warned, it is brutal. It's hard, and the further you go, it keeps getting worse, man. So another good thing to, you know, to keep in mind is when you die, it's over. Start again. That's what makes it frustrating. It's so fucking hard, and I played, you know, a few hours of it, but I always found myself going back to the normal game. Now, Hellraid was actually a canceled game by Techland, and they had the clever idea of including it as a DLC in Dying Light. I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, they already had, you know, they put so much time and effort and money, I guess, into Hellraid before, and instead of scrapping it and forgetting about it completely, they just included it into, I mean, arguably Techland's biggest, most popular, and best and most successful games. So good for them. So with the very unique combination of, you know, its genre, the gameplay, the story, expansions, and other DLCs, it's no surprise that Dying Light has had such longevity and that Techland is actively creating new content for it. With the upcoming release of Dying Light 2, however, there's no way of telling how long they will continue. Whatever that answer may be, in my opinion, Dying Light is one of the absolute best games of its genre with an extremely high replay value. It will always remain in my rotation, and I've enjoyed playing it many times through. So that's a wrap for my talk over Dying Light and the very first episode of Video Games and Coffee. I really enjoyed it. I love talking about this, and I love just spreading the word on games that I found to not only just that I found fantastic and very well made, but just made me feel good playing. This is a place, you know, that I would like to reach out to you, connect with you. I would really appreciate it if you'd reach out to me. Let me know what you think. Do you love Dying Light now? Have you played it? Are you a fan? Do you not like it? Are you thinking about giving it a shot? If you have any questions about it, please let me know. As I mentioned before, I don't like to give away spoilers, so this is not anything that's going to really, give anything away about the game. It's just me trying to convince you, give it a shot. It's a wonderful game. But I thank you so much for listening all the way through. This was really just about a half hour of a guy just talking about a video game. Jesus Christ, I hope you made it. I hope you thought it was interesting, and I hope you thought it was helpful. So thank you again. This is Video Games and Coffee. I'm very much looking forward to episode 2. Stay safe, have fun, be good to each other, and I'll talk to you next time. We'll be right back.